You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to Wake Up Tucson on 1030 The Voice. As you're used to this week, not hearing Christy Simone's voice.
Oh,
this is, I know, you're all disappointed out there, but we will have a good, interesting show. It'll be more interesting if you decide to call in. Call a number, 790-2040. This is Barney Brenner, and I'm sitting here behind the plexiglass with
Jonathan Hoffman.
Yes, that's him. And behind the real glass, they call the monkey glass, but that's pretty dang insulting.
Good
behind the professional glass Edward P. Alexander, who's been turning the buttons on this show for 11 plus years.
Still can't find them all.
If you've never seen a studio.
You only have 10 fingers. There's a lot more buttons.
10 fingers and 10,000 buttons. And then you've got 10,000 more links on your screen. So, well, welcome.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. We've got a
bunch of
stuff.
Are we going to make it to the end of this week or what?
We are. It's okay. Cruising right along.
What day is it today, anyway?
Thursday. That's it. I thought it would be like maybe Saturday or something.
The only problem is I don't know if the Catalinas are going to make it to the end of this week. God help us.
Smoke again. They seem to have it a little bit in control this time around. We'll see.
I think they saved Oracle.
Yeah,
and it was going along.
And it was being threatened. We can see the around Push Ridge to a bit of the Oracle side of the Catalinas, and the fire was very low last night. Couldn't believe it. Mm. It has danced around to every corner of those mountains.
It has danced. That's a good way to put it. It's been covered everything, so there can't be that much left. Hopefully, they've got Summerhaven contained here. I think they've really been working on that, and hopefully we'll
doing a good job.
Yep, looks like it.
Yeah, amazing. With we're into, I think, 70-something thousand or maybe more.
Give you the number, but 74,500. That's crazy.
74,000.
It spread over the whole mountain. About it.
Just to give
from
you
that
an
end
idea.
To that end.
Yes. Yes. Right? Entirely.
From Push Ridge to Sabino Canyon.
Yes. Unbelievable. And around Push Ridge to the
and
north.
And on the backside. And we don't. Yeah.
I got a friend who lives in Catalina. He says he sits out in his porch and drums the fingers, looking up at the mountain and hoping it doesn't come his way.
And just to translate for you, that 74,000 acres is 110 plus square miles.
Square miles.
And just to put that in perspective, the city of Tucson is approximately twice that size.
That's it.
So we're looking at fires that have encompassed an area half the size of the entire city of Tucson.
It's crazy.
Limit to limit.
Thank you.
Well, keep firefighters and the weather in your prayers. Thank God we have not seen a single death, and I think I heard one building has been torched.
Radio Ridge or something like
at
that.
At the fire district.
The fire.
So we've got a ton of stuff to talk about. If you want to do your own radio show, you ever think of wanting to do a show, all you have to do every day is get the New York Times headline email. And you've
I do, but I hit delete.
No, you know what?
You've got a topic.
I hit delete. I got 10 of them. I hit delete with everything else, like TV news, radio for the, trying to tell me the same thing for the fourth time in any particular day. But I got to read the New York Times every day because I've got to see what the left is doing.
Well, that's why,
And you know what? You know what's going on today? There's no way Trump can win.
Okay.
It's impossible.
They don't have a big story, so now they just go straight to Trump.
Well, the headline is Biden takes dominant lead as voters reject Trump on virus and race.
What a lie. This
all
is the
lies.
New York Times.
Yes.
And they have to have it for breakfast, man. They have to have this thing. It's crazy.
Well, they officially gave up. They made an announcement. I mean, you know, like a couple months ago.
We're
not going to bother being objective anymore. We're firing the crew that edits for, you know, objectivity and everything.
There you go. Okay.
And there's no difference between the news and the opinion page anymore.
Did they have?
When you're in New York, you can get the Post, or you can get the Inquirer, or you get, what the hell's the difference?
Either of those. No, the Post is very good.
I like the
Post. The Inquirer, yeah. The Daily News is useless as well.
Yeah.
But you know what? I really have got to say, the mask is off, but they admitted it. So I'll give them credit for that.
Right.
But they have not been honest since the 1930s.
Ooh.
They had a correspondent.
What's his name?
Yep.
In the Soviet Union.
Walter Duranty.
Duranty, that's right.
And he was their columnist. He was their man in the Soviet Union in the late 20s and into the 30s. And just like prior to the Gulf War, the CNN had a station in Baghdad. And the only way they stay and are allowed to remain in the country is to parrot the country's party line. So they were a mouthpiece for Saddam Hussein. Otherwise, they'd be booted. And that started at least no later than the late 1920s. And Walter Duranty, during a time when Stalin was starving millions of his countrymen, Walter Duranty did a series of articles on how wonderful things were in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Times got a Pulitzer Prize for that series, that lying series. Not only have they never rescinded the prize that was absolutely undeserved, they never even apologized for it. And we're talking over 80 years ago now, or around 80 years ago. So, no, almost 90 years ago. So that's the New York
Times.
And
now you have the 1619 Project that got a Pulitzer Prize. The more history changes, the more it stays the same.
Oh, that's perfect. That is. If for those listeners not familiar with the 1619 Project, they started it last year, the 400th anniversary of the real founding of the United States, when slaves were brought over, because, you know, the United States was founded just to perpetuate slavery, don't you know? And if you read the actual history of what happened in 1619, yes, there were a series of black folks that came over. There were indentured servants, different than slavery.
Yeah.
Indentured servant is somebody.
Not much.
No. Quite a bit. An indentured servant has an indenture. They have a debt to pay off.
Right.
And after they pay it off, they're free.
Yeah. So they're slaves for five or ten years, whatever it takes.
Yes, exactly.
To pay off the debt.
And slavery was the universal policy worldwide, every country, and even today in Africa, there's still slavery and slave trading going on. But the distinction with the United States, which they try to denigrate so badly, the United States got rid of slavery in the shortest amount of time of any country in history. From its founding to the obliteration of slavery in the U.S. was 89 years. When Lincoln said 87 years ago, he was promoting the emancipation, the Freedom Proclamation, but it didn't really come into effect until after the Civil War, 2 years later.
So the 1619 Project is, as Barney was pointing out, is claiming that it's all about slavery, and it all started in 1619 when the slaves were first brought here, and then I forget the name of the woman who was in charge of the project, but she went on to explain the whole history, and she made up all this stuff, and when they published it and they first started writing it, she was deluged with professional historians, Pulitzer. Nobel Prize winning historians, four or five of them were pointing out how everything she was saying was wrong and untrue, and not only that, but what else was the thing? Well, in any event, to make a long story short, after lying and making up stuff, being historically inaccurate, and having to issue a 500-word correction on her piece, she gets a Pulitzer Prize. Makes perfect sense.
Insane. They want to kill 1776 as the founding of the country. They wanted to turn it back because this country is all about racism, according to them. You know, and it is all, in my opinion, okay, this is editorial. It started last year, all in preparation for this election year.
Yeah.
And our response to the Wu flu, as Christy Simone has very cleverly named it, or the Wuhan flu, or as Trump says, the China virus, all the reaction in the press is geared around keeping the country damaged, hoping to blame something on Trump. This is opinion, but bottom line, you see, like another New York Times headline today, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, and South Carolina set daily records. We're all going to die.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Nationwide, more than 36,000 cases were reported Wednesday in one day.
How many were reported survived?
All of them.
Oh.
Almost.
Oh, that's not...
My guess is almost all of them.
Almost all of them.
Because those 33,000 cases were simply positive tests.
Right.
That's it.
Didn't mean they died.
So if you...
More testing means more positive cases.
Darn, I forgot my sound machine. I could have gone ding.
We just have to do the organic one. Let's try to get
ding. Ding.
Okay.
Are
you ready?
Be ready with the dumb button. Well, we're having fun this morning. Hope you are. If you're listening out there, of course you're listening out there. If you want to be part of any conversation, you want to start your own conversation,
uh-oh,
you want to talk about what Sean McCluskey and Mark Van Buren discussed yesterday, what we discussed on Tuesday.
What we're going to discuss today. And if you're not listening, turn your radio on and listen.
There you go. Now we got them all.
Say it louder. Very good. Very good.
It is George Michael's birthday today. Wake up, Tucson. There you go. Willie.
Is it Willie's birthday today?
Heck no. Every day is a good day when Willie sings.
That works for me.
If Willie's still alive, it's a good day.
Yes.
There you go.
Well, you're listening to 1030. Excuse me.
1030 KVOI, the cough.
The voice. Trusted local news and talk. Call in number 790-2040. I have a confession, an admission. Uh-oh. I screwed up on Tuesday. I mentioned we're bringing up AOC, who had a primary on Tuesday. She unfortunately won it handily.
But at least
I got to hand it to the gal who ran against her. It was a former CNBC regular contributor. And by the name of Michelle Caruso Cabrera. So she had the triple name hyphen as well. But
she still didn't win.
She didn't win. But I wanted to say how it's not very widely known how AOC actually got into Congress. It was a brilliant maneuver, but she had no political ambition. You probably know she was a bartender. And there was a group called the Justice Democrats, as headed by a guy, a trust fund kid from India,
Chakrabarty.
Yes, I caught Chakrabarty. Say that three times quick. And they
must have been practicing.
Had, well, I'm pretty familiar with the name. They had literally a casting call.
Yeah.
For somebody to run for Congress. They were looking for an actress to play the part of a congressional candidate. And
so they can just pull the strings as usual.
Yes, and AOC's brother nominated her. She went, she won the audition. And they absolutely blindsided the number four Democrat in the House of Representatives from New York, Joe Crowley.
He was in line to take over, who's Pelosi's assistant there?
He was in leadership and moving
in
up.
The hierarchy and the pecking order. He was going to replace, was it Clymer or something?
I'm not somebody. Sure.
Anyway, yeah, he was fast track for the big leagues, and he was he'd been in that seat for 20, 30 years or something crazy, it never occurred to him that he was going to be threatened by anybody, much less getting primaried by a fellow Democrat. And you're absolutely right. She was picked because she had the energy, and she was exciting, and she could talk a blue streak. And Chakrabarty actually thought she was AOC was like the longest shot he had of his six targeted districts that they were working on, and she won, and he became her. He was not only her campaign manager, but he became her,
chief of staff.
Chief of staff until he got in trouble for extorting, or not extorting, but misappropriating funds.
Misappropriating. Yep.
Yeah, and then he got bumped out.
So. And just to give you an idea in a congressional district with a population, the congressional districts, they're reapportioned every 10 years. We're going to do it in 2021. And which is why it's so important to try to get another Republican on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Because if we can do that, then Republicans will get a chance to redistrict for the first time in 7 years.
Mm.
So, but in a congressional district, average congressional district has a population of 800,000 people. And AOC won that race approximately 15 to 10,000. So, just crazy. So, and we're stuck with her in Congress.
I've been trying to look for a silver lining on the whole statue thing, of all the statues getting pulled down. And I'm hoping, and the one thing good I think that could come of this is if they get around to pulling down the statue downtown of Pancho Villa.
Yeah, that's,
wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, don't count on that. But if all the statues that deserve to be torn down, the guy who's murdered a bandit who murdered Americans, it's astonishing how little of our history is known by a huge chunk of the population out there.
My friend Tom Danahy points out that his son, the great-grandfather of his son, was murdered by Pancho Villa and his gang.
Really?
Yeah.
And then how is Danahy such a lefty?
I don't know, but he's no fan of the statue. We used to daydream together sometime, every now and then, of going down there with a torch and cutting the feet off the horse and dropping it into back of the truck and driving it down to the border and pushing it off over the truck.
Good luck. Oh, okay.
Everybody has to dream, right?
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Tom Danahy is one brilliant fellow.
That he is.
He is a nuclear physicist, I believe.
Yeah, he got a degree in nuke engineering from the U of A because he was late to, back in the old days of the U of A, you go around in the mall there, and, mm-hmm. and you'd have cards
right, yes.
in the boxes.
You get
and that was
whatever
like,
was left.
Yeah, that was all that was left was you know, Nuke
that's
Engineering.
Crazy.
So
that's crazy.
And
of course, great sports coach and all
yes.
that.
Yes,
girls basketball. We got sports with Ryan Larson coming up
and
next.
And we have David Schweikert.
Here comes Mr. Cool. Ryan Larson. Morning, Ryan.
Morning, Ed. How are you doing?
What's up in the Ute Mountains up there?
Oh, man, not a lot going on. People are freaking out a little bit. Still, cases continue to rise.
Well.
But it's nice out, so you at least got that going for you, and we're waiting to see how things go.
But you have good summer weather and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's 90, so it's cold by Arizona standards, but other than that, it's great.
Okay, so they playing baseball yet or what? Or are they ever going to, and does anybody ever care? That's probably the question I want to start with here, and then guys jump in. But what's up, Ryan? What's with this baseball thing? I mean, really? Can we wait till maybe November and then see if everybody cares? What's going on? You're a sports guy. You care. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, there's at least one person who cares because yeah. I will admit that I care about baseball.
I know you do.
But it looks like things are coming back now, which is good. And basically what happened this week is when the players and owners came to an agreement back in March when the season was originally shut down, one part of the agreement was that the MLB commissioner, Rob Manfred, had the power to just institute a season of however many games of his choosing if the players and the owners didn't end up coming to an agreement on their own. And that's essentially what happened because the players hated all the proposals the owners made and the owners hated all the proposals the players made. Manfred finally stepped in and said, all right, we're doing a 60-game season. It is scheduled to start. The actual games are supposed to start July 23rd or July 24th, but training camp, basically a spring training part two, is supposed to start on July 1st. And so baseball's coming back. They didn't make a lot of changes to the rules or anything. It's only going to be a 60-game season that ends at the end of September. So really we're looking at a two-month regular season for baseball. And then they're going to do a standard postseason as well. And so they didn't expand the playoffs like they were talking about. The players didn't cave for that. The only real kind of major change that you're going to see on the field is that now they're doing a universal DH this year. And so in the National League as well, pitchers aren't going to be hitting, which is a good thing for several reasons. One, you want to preserve the pitchers as much as possible since they're going to be playing just a lot of games in rapid succession. Mm. And two, no one likes watching pitchers hit, honestly, because pitchers
right?
are bad at hitting. They bat less than 100. You might as well get a guy in there who can at least hit a home run or doesn't have to bunt every single time. So I think this is good for baseball. That's not necessarily a long-term deal, but this is what we're looking at for the season. So there's going to be baseball. They finally got it done. They didn't really make any – the players and the owners didn't come to any sort of agreement. So the long-term implications of this are baseball's collective bargaining agreement expires at the end of 2021. And the negotiations this time around were very contentious. Mm-hmm. The relationship between the owners and the players is extremely frigid. And so when the league has their collective bargaining agreement expire, it's – very likely going to be a very brutal negotiation. It's right now you probably could already bet on there being a labor stoppage at some point, either a lockout or a strike going down. And
that would be at the end of next year's season, right?
At the end of next year.
You're talking, okay,
it expires
yeah.
in December of 2021. And it's going to be bad for baseball because they're going to have even more negotiation problems, even more contentious arguments that are very publicized. And people are already kind of mad about baseball for not being able to get it done sooner. And so baseball's in a weird situation, but it's good that they're going to play games. It's good that the players are going to show up, because if baseball didn't play at all this season, there was going to be massive fallout across the league between owners potentially going bankrupt and players losing tons of money mm-hmm. and losing the league as a whole, losing tons of fans.
Everybody loses.
And so now all they have to worry about now is a second wave going and shutting down the entire season again. But they can't do anything about that. At least they showed right. that they want to get on the field finally.
We have a caller on the line. Barney, what's your question for Larson?
What's up?
Hello, Ryan. You're in with the second string today. Barney Brenner and Jonathan Hoffman, So I was going to ask you about players in the stands, number one, and number two, what happens
if fans in the stands, you mean?
I'm sorry, fans in the stands. I even wrote that down. I told you second string. And then what happens when you get one of the teams with a couple of positives? What happens to the rest of the league?
Yeah, so Bernie, this is a question that the players and the owners have talked about a lot because safety precautions are something that the players had to approve in order to start the season. The one thing we know for sure is there's not going to be fans in the stands for an extremely long time because the league just can't take that risk. With cases rising, it's hard to really argue when the league, like all of Major League Sports shut down when one player tested positive for COVID back in March, back when Rudy Gobert, the Jazz, tested positive, every sports league shut down. And now we have cases rising across the board and we have players in every league testing positive, but the leagues are coming back now. It's kind of a weird contradiction. So they're not going to put fans in the stands because there's no way that's going to get improved. That's not something that realistically can be done. Maybe by the time the postseason rolls around, if things are going better, you can start talking about getting fans in, maybe doing smaller crowd sizes to keep people a little more separated. But for now, that's not realistic. It's all going to be games without fans. But when players test positive, the leagues, they don't want to shut down now that they're coming back. We had a couple more NBA players test positive today. There's been several baseball players that have tested positive in the last few weeks. So if they test positive, basically the rule is you're going to have a two-week quarantine. You're not going to be able to have contact with anybody, just self-quarantine, and they're going to keep playing games as much as possible. Unless the cases get really bad or you have multiple players on one team testing positive, they're not going to cancel games. They're not going to try and shut down the season because realistically they can't afford to at this point. They've already lost half of the season. And so they're just going to say, all right, do your best to stay healthy, follow all these quarantine guidelines that we have when we're playing games. And then if you test positive, basically you're on the injured list for 2 weeks and you're not allowed to play or do anything.
Well, are they going to test them every day then, I would imagine, right? When you come to the stadium.
Yeah, they're doing everyday tests.
Yeah. And see what happens.
What's the total number of players in Major League Baseball?
In the big leagues.
You have
25-man rosters, which is over 30 teams. If I can do the math,
yeah, over 700. It's over 750 players. And out of that number, how many positive tests have we had to date?
To date, we've probably had, over the course of the coronavirus, about 10 players testing positive that we know of. And so the league, once it starts back up in July, all the players now are quarantining because they're supposed to report to training camps in a week. And so they need to be as healthy as possible when they get there. But then once the games start, they're basically not supposed to have contact with anybody throughout this entire schedule. And we'll see what actually happens because you even look at the PGA Tour right now. The PGA Tour had their first week. They did really well, didn't have any positive tests in their first tournament back. And now we're into week two and week three, and players are testing positive every now and then. We've probably had three or four tests from PGA Tour players or caddies already that were positive in the last 2 weeks. And so it's kind of inevitable in baseball where things are probably going to be a little more lax because they're trying to play games at home stadiums. People are going to be traveling. It's inevitable that players are going to test positive too. And there's nothing baseball can really do about that. They just can prepare and come up with some guidelines for when that happens. And hope that things don't get so bad that they get pressured into shutting down the entire season again. Because the players want to play, and most of the owners actually want games to happen, even though they've claimed they'll lose money by playing games without having fans in the stand.
So you answered my question was, because I kind of turned this whole baseball thing off a couple of weeks ago, and now they're going to do this, but they're not going to do this, and you know, and it's all hypothetical, and it's like, call me when you got a season, okay? So now you got a season. But they're going to play, and they're not just going to play in Florida, they're going to play at their home stadiums now.
Yeah, that's the goal, is they want to play at home stadiums.
But what do you mean it's the goal? It's not, they haven't figured that out yet?
Well, that's what they're doing right now.
Okay.
So they're going to play in home stadiums. Players right now are reporting to either some teams are doing an extended spring training in Florida or Arizona, but some teams are doing them at their home stadium.
But they are going to play. The plan is to play the games in their home stadium like a regular season kind of thing, shortened season.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. It would have been a lot harder for baseball to do like a hub the way the NBA is, where everyone's playing in Florida because baseball has so many games over.
Yeah.
So there's no days off. It's just like, it's pretty much impossible to do that. The Arizona idea they were trying to do was kind of insane to begin with. And so they're going to do home stadiums.
Okay.
All right. Very good. We love you calling in.
Do you know, one more thing on baseball, okay? So people like we used to have, but we don't anymore, AAA and stuff like that. Are they going to have minor leagues so that fans can, well, the fans can't go to the stadium anyhow. Never mind. Gotcha. I mean, it's summertime. You want to go to a game, you can't go to the game.
Yeah, so,
you want to go to the beach, mind. You can't go to the beach. Well, you can go to the beach in this state. I'm not in that state. No.
Would you hold on for a second and we'll come back? You got a question?
Yeah, for sure.
Ryan, we appreciate you. We love you. You're reporting on it. Like Chris says, you are the best. Forget paid or unpaid.
Yeah.
You are the most knowledgeable
forget the paid thing, Ryan.
Sportscaster. You could step in. You know, God bless you with a great career ahead. We love having you. We want you for another segment. So hang on. We'll come back with Ryan Larson, our sports intern on KVOI, trusted local news and talk.
Carly Simon's birthday, and if Chris was here, he would say, play it for Ryan. So there you go, man. Welcome back. Wake up, Tucson.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Go ahead.
Nobody does it better than Ryan Larson on sports. So we got a few more questions for you. NFL, touch base on what's going on there and what do you see over the next rest of the year, actually.
So we had some interesting and not very positive NFL news this morning because throughout the whole virus, the whole pandemic, the NFL has been acting pretty normally. They haven't had to cancel any events. They didn't have to cancel free agency. They didn't have to cancel the draft. Granted, they have to do them in different ways. The draft is essentially done over Zoom, and free agency teams and players weren't able to meet in person. But the NFL has been acting as if they were going to have a normal season when things actually rolled around at the end of August, the beginning of September. And that's because the NFL is wanting to have fans in the stands. That's a huge money source for them. They only play 16 games. They need to have fans in the stands. And so the NFL has been doing everything possible to basically have as close to a normal season as possible. But this morning is announced that the Hall of Fame game, which is the first preseason game that the NFL has each season, it's when they do the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and it's a week before all the other preseason games. I believe this year it's supposed to be on August 8th. They canceled the Hall of Fame game. Mm-hmm. And so they've essentially canceled their first preseason game, which is kind of a foreboding thing for the rest of the NFL season if they have to cancel their first game, a game that's pretty big for the NFL, partly because it's the Hall of Fame and they're inducting players and people like to see that, and also just because it's the first football people get in 6 months, and so people, despite it being a preseason game and generally being a pretty terrible game, people want to watch that because football is back and it's great. But that's not a good sign for the NFL that they've had to cancel their Hall of Fame game, and now we're looking at what adjustments the NFL is going to have to make. They're having players test positive for coronavirus left and right. Some of the more notable ones include the Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott, who is a pretty big name that came down with the virus. And so that's where the NFL at is. They're having players test positive. They're supposed to be starting training camps in a couple of weeks. July 28th is when the first teams were supposed to report. So they have about a month left. It's going to be interesting what the NFL can do, because now with even baseball coming back and saying we're not going to have any fans, you have basically no sport with a plan to get fans to games in the near future. It's what is the NFL going to be able to do, because the NFL would be weird without fans. I've watched a few of the soccer games without fans, and it's already weird to begin with, just kind of this, it basically echoes throughout a giant empty stadium. And the NFL too, where you have these 80,000 person stadiums that they want to fill with fans because they only have 8 home games a year, they might not be able to do that. And we'll see what the NFL does. I'm sure they're going to play games because there's no way the NFL doesn't. They would lose way more money than baseball is even lost by not having half a season. But this is where we're at with the NFL. They've been largely the optimistic league, the positive league, like we're going to be fine by the time the season starts. But now they are starting to have to take some corrective action throughout all this coronavirus. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do going forward.
Well, you talk about players testing positive, just 10 in the in Major League Baseball and left and right in the NFL. But there's a big difference between testing positive and having significant symptoms and sickness. Have we seen any of these players come down with you know, bad cases of them? Any instance at all anywhere in Major League sports?
It depends on the player. They don't always publicize exactly how they're feeling or if they have symptoms. A lot of players, like Von Miller for the Broncos, tested positive a couple of months ago, and he was basically like, I'm fine. He didn't really give an update on his symptoms. Back when this first started with Rudy Gobert testing positive, he was tested because he had symptoms. But then he got Donovan Mitchell, another player on the Jazz, to test positive as well, but Mitchell was asymptomatic. And so you have these two players who play next to each other and are around each other all the time, and one came down with symptoms and one didn't. And then for these NFL players, some of them announce publicly that they have symptoms, and for some other ones, they're just like, hey, I tested positive, and now I'm going to self-quarantine for the next few weeks until I recover. And we don't have as good of an indication, but really with these leagues, they're not going to care so much whether or not players are symptomatic or not because of the reports that you can transfer the virus whether or not you have symptoms. And so the league as a whole, all they care about is positive tests. They don't necessarily care as much about the player's symptoms. And these players are as low risk as they get. They're usually in their 20s. They are extremely physically fit. They eat very healthy. And so it's just the problem of transferring the virus to more people and having that happen rather than worrying about the player's health as much. Granted, you're concerned about the player's health, but they're not considered high risk for it to actually be fatal or even really that bad of a virus for them.
Well, we've got a couple more.
You got another caller on the line. It's Ed. And with a question for Ryan. So
he supersedes.
You brought some guy named Miller up. I don't know who it was, but then you brought me right back to all of a sudden the U of A, which I hadn't thought about for a while, except that I was supposed to call and get my parking pass yesterday. I don't get a parking pass. $95, you can get a parking pass for six games. At $10, that doesn't work. That'd be 60. It's cheaper not to do it. But anyway, I want to know, am I going to go to a college football game in September? Is anybody talking about that, or are they all just like behind their masks on that one too?
No, college football is working on this as well because they also have huge financial implications between getting fans in the stands or at least being able to play games. And for the NFL, it's easier to figure out than college football because the NFL, these guys are employees. Their full-time job is to play football. Mm-hmm. But for college football, we still pretend like these guys are students and they just play football for fun.
And there's hundreds of colleges and universities.
Right. We have 138 FBS football teams. We have basically 1,000 more between Division I all the way down to NAIA. And so you have a massive amount of programs, and they have to figure out travel because you can't do like a bubble like the NBA is doing for basketball or football because you have to travel. These players need to be on campus because to be eligible in the NCAA, they have to go to class and get good grades or at least passing grades. And so college football and college basketball really have to figure this out in order to return. And so it seems unlikely right now that there's going to be fans in the stands when games start again in September, unless things improve dramatically in the next 2 months. But they still need to do games because these athletic departments rely so heavily on football revenue specifically. That's where they bring in most of their money. That's where they can actually make money on sports because they're losing money on almost every other sport than basketball and football. But these players, because they are not employees, because they are technically amateur athletes, it's a lot harder to justify risking their health when they're not getting paid. And sure. I think that most universities are going to see that. I think a lot of players are going to push back on that if things with the virus are not improving. And so that's the problem with college athletics is every athletic program, every state is going to be different. You have Arizona, who has to travel to Colorado to play University of Colorado, and those two states might have completely different requirements for mask wearing, for health and safety guidelines. I don't know how they're going to figure that out. So it seems like the easiest solution is going to be to travel and quarantine and then play games without fans to try and limit the spread as much as possible, or trying to keep these college students as safe as possible, because they then have to go back to campus sure. and go to sometimes in-person classes. Yeah. Some schools are going to be doing in-person classes. It's going to be a weird thing to figure out.
And there, and you have to remember there are more than just football players when you talk about college athletics, too. There are plenty of teams from gymnastics to, you know, rugby to everything else. And so they're all going to be affected and might not have sports this year. That's crazy stuff.
It's a crazy year. Wow. Ryan, we've got about a minute and a half left. Any comments on what's going on at NASCAR?
Yeah, which part of NASCAR do you want to talk about?
Okay, well, we can talk about fans in the stands, or we can talk about ropes and nooses and shades of Jesse Smollett and anything you want to talk about.
All right, yeah, let's talk about Bubba Wallace. You brought that up. And so Bubba Wallace is a NASCAR driver who he's the one African-American NASCAR driver in all of NASCAR. And about a week ago, it was reported that someone had left a noose in his garage in Talladega. And then the FBI came in, did an investigation to see if it was a hate crime. And it was determined that the noose was actually just a rope to pull open the garage. And it wasn't actually meant to be a noose.
And so isn't that crazy?
It sounds really bad, and people are really angry at Bubba Wallace for this. There's a lot of backlash against him. Ultimately, I just feel like everyone is overreacting right now in every way. Yeah, was it a noose? No, it wasn't. It was just a rope. But in the state of heightened racial tension, this heightened tension about everything going on, everyone is so angry, everyone's so on edge, it doesn't... I'm not necessarily mad at Bubba Wallace for assuming that someone had performed a hate crime on him, but at the same time, it is everyone's kind of realizing that we are incredibly on edge. It's kind of ridiculous, and so it's been a bad look for NASCAR. It's been a bad look for the fans. It's been a bad look for Bubba Wallace, and ultimately, I think the best thing to come out of it is, thankfully, NASCAR was not actually doing that. Someone in NASCAR didn't leave a noose in his garage, right. Because that would have been terrible. That would have been awful, because you still have NASCAR fans flying Confederate flags over the track, which is also a bad look.
But way overblown. As usual, another sports metaphor, you hit it out of the park. Ryan Larson, thanks for calling in. You're on Wake Up Tucson.
Thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you.